Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to our Thursday morning class at the Youngest of Woodmere. So this is the final class of the spring session. There's no class next week, and there's no class the week after. I think that's, we resume, what's the date? I'll tell you, it should be specific so you know. Okay, our next class after today is July 8th. Okay, no class June 24th, no class July 1st. My share of the summer session begins Thursday, July 8th. It's a 6-week summer session. So there is no share the next 2 weeks. Okay, so since there's no share the next 2 weeks, and by the time you meet, it's July 8th, which is Erev, the 9 days, and we don't meet again until then. So I decided to focus on Inyanei Diyoma. A week from Sunday is Shivasar Batamas, which ushers in the mournful 3 weeks, the time period known as Bein HaMitzarim, when we mourn Churban Beis HaMikdash, and Galus, Tzion, and Yerushalayim, Shechinta BeGalusa, the Shechinas and Galus with us. I thought it would be appropriate to speak about this time period and what it means to us, and some reflection and some insights. And then when we pick up, we're really Erev Tisha B'Av. So I'm going to begin in the Mishnah in Tainis. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Tainis, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Vav. The Mishnah says, Chamisha Dvarim, 5 things, Eru Es Avoseinu B'Shivasar B'Tamas. 5 things befell our forefathers on Shivasar B'Tamas. V'Chamisha B'Tisha B'Av. And 5 things befell our forefathers on Tisha B'Av. So what are the 5 calamities of Shivasar B'Tamas? V'Shivasar B'Tamas Nishtabru Haluchos. The Luchos were broken. If anyone remembers, we spoke about that here before Shavuos on the Shivrei Luchos. The Luchos were broken. Uvatal HaTamid, the Karban Tamid, which is offered twice a day. So Karban Echa Tasa B'Boker. So Karban Asheni Tasa Ben Ha'Arbayim. The Karban Tamid was Mevatal. They didn't have any more sheep left, and they had to stop bringing the carbon tamid. V'huv kaha'ir, the city walls were breached, and which was a really foreshadowing of the Golus, because now the enemy was entered into Jerusalem. V'saras apustamus es ha'Torah, apustamus burned the Sefer Torah, and finally, it's a debate as to exactly when he lived and who he was, but the burning of the Sefer Torah is a tragedy. And finally, v'ha'amid selam beheichal, and avodah zarah was put into the Beis HaMikdash. So these are the 5 tragedies of Shivasar B'Tamas. And then the Mishnah continues and tells us what were the 5 tragedies of Tisha B'Av. The Tisha B'Av nigzar al avoseinu shelo yikansu la'aretz. So the most famous Parsha Shlach is that it was decreed upon our forefathers that they will not enter into Eretz Yisrael. The Charav Habayis Barishona Uvashnia. So the first temple and the second temple were burned. Ah, they were set aflame on Tisha B'Av. V'nilkada Beitar. Beitar surrendered. Beitar, I shouldn't say surrendered, fell. V'nechusha Ha'ir. And the city, Tzion, was plowed over. And therefore, the Mishnah concludes, Mishanichnas Av, when Av enters, Mime'atin B'Simcha. We are supposed to diminish our Simcha. So this time period is the most mournful time on the Jewish calendar year. It begins, again, a week from this coming Sunday with the fast of Shivasar B'Tamas, and it runs through 3 weeks through Tisha B'Av. And this is what we will be speaking about today. Not specifically the 5 tragedies, but this whole inyan of mourning, and can we rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, which is really the question that we are going to be exploring today. After 2,000 years of Galus, is it possible for us in our generation to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash? This is what we will speak about. I will begin by quoting Rav Soloveitchik from the book, for your reference, The Lord is Righteous in All His Ways, commentary on Tisha B'Av and the Kinnor. The lamentations, the poems of tragedy, if you will, that we recite on the mournful day of Tisha B'Av. So Rav Soloveitchik teaches as follows. The kinos, the lamentations, conclude with the kina entitled Eli Tzion Ve'Areha. Let Tzion and her cities lament. Until this point, we have said a great deal. There's been a lot to say. There is a lot over which we weep. And then at the end, we get up from the kina and we say, Eli Tzion Ve'Areha. We recite this kina while we are standing, and with it, we close the kina. It's the last kina. Who wrote Eli Tzion Ve'Areha? Some say it was written by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, perhaps. But what is the content, asked Rabbi Soloveitchik, of Eli Tzion Ve'Areha? It reflects themes that we have already mentioned many times during the recitation of the previous kinnot. Some of the kinnot are almost identical, says the Rav, with Eli Tzion ve'araha. Eli means to mourn. It's a kinnot of mourning, like all of the kinnot are really kinnot of mourning. We say it in the kinnot, A'ada ad chug shamayim, I will soar up to the vault of heaven. A'ala iti shamayim, it means I will make the heaven mourn, I will make the heavens grieve, I will make the heavens cry with me. The heavens will participate in the mourning for Jerusalem. To mourn, Aleph Lamed Hey, Aleph Lamed Hey, means to mourn. Elit Zion V'Araha means to continue to mourn, says Rav Soloveitchik. At the end of the kinnot, we are ready to depart. We are ready to close the book. And with the final kinnot, we say no. Kinnot can never be finished. Mourning for the Beit HaMikdash can never be finished. Says the Rav, until the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, mourning continues. We have already said by this point so many kinnot, but we have to continue. And that's the theme, says Rabbi Soloveitchik, of Eli Tzion ve'araha. Aleph Lamed Hey means to mourn. But what we are saying is continue to mourn. The mourning is not ending. Just because you close the book of the kinnot, it does not mean that mourning is over. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, and I quote, if a person actually grieves over the loss of Jerusalem, if a person actually mourns for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and the losses we have sustained, when we consider them, it's impossible to consider the magnitude of the losses that we have sustained in the almost 2,000 years since the Churban. Do you think that by saying kinnos we have discharged our duty? That it is enough? Do we not need to mourn anymore? As we have noted earlier, quote, there is no such thing as overdoing the mourning for Yerushalayim. Eli Tzion, mourn and continue to mourn. You claim you have exhausted all of the kinnot, says the Rav. So weep, even if you do not recite kinnot. Continue to mourn. Like a woman who is in the pain of labor. Kimo isha v'tzera'aha. Like a woman in the tsa'ar of labor. Rabbi Soloveitchik says you cannot go over to a woman who is in labor and say to her, do not cry, do not make noise, do not raise your voice. Anyone who would say this to a woman at the time of labor is a fool, because a person is in such terrible pain. She must react by emitting a sound. She will cry and she will weep and she will shout. It is simply part of human nature. It cannot be otherwise. And the same applies to Churban Yerushalayim. Just like you don't go to a woman in labor and say, it's okay, you're not in so much pain. Calm down, you don't have to be crying now. The same is true and applies to Churban Yerushalayim. As long as the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt, as long as it lays and consists of debris and lays in ruin, as long as it is conquered by others and under the control of idolaters, we cannot stop crying. We are, says the Rav, like a woman crying, kimo isha, v'tzira'ah, like a woman crying in her pain. It is ridiculous to tell us to stop weeping over Jerusalem, to tell us that the rule of not overdoing our mourning for Tzion and Yerushalayim, there's no such thing. You cannot overdo the mourning. This is the unique aspect of Avela Yishana. When it comes to Avelut Chadasha, there are limits, there are halachos. There's a Shiva, there's a Shoshim, there's 12 months, and then there's a Yurtzeit. But when it comes to Avela Yishana, there are no limits. Avelut Chadasha has limits. And we cannot mourn too much over Tzion and Yerushalayim, over Churban and Golos. Like telling a woman who has just been married, but the boy she married died the day after the marriage. Would you tell her to stop mourning? Would you tell her to stop shedding her tears? A person like this has no sensitivity. Eli Tzion ve'araha. Let Tzion go, let her cry. Mourn over the Churban, do not stop. The kinnot over Yerushalayim have no end. It was a hard, challenging, very difficult and confusing year and a half. between the political situation and the COVID matzav, it was very hard and very confusing. We feel like life is going back to normal a little bit. It is. So the threat of becoming very comfortable in Golis comes back, and we feel too comfortable here. I'm talking to myself. How much do we really mourn over Churban Beis Hamikdash and Golis? How painful is it to us? Do we consider it an aveilut chadasha, get over it and move on, or an aveilut yishana, where there is no such thing as a limit to the mourning? And that is why we end the kinnah, says the Rav, with elitzion ve'araha. Whatever we have said, no matter how much we have cried, no matter how much we express our grief over the Churban, our complete despair, it will never be enough. We still did not mourn adequately the way we should have mourned. And now he ends, and with this, it will be the springboard into the next part of the shir. This piece ends, Rabbi Soloveitchik says, our waiting for the arrival of the Messiah and for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash has no limits. Our waiting for the arrival of the Messiah and the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash has no limits. Even though he may tarry, nevertheless, I will wait for him. Devias HaMashiach ani mamid. V'af al pisha yismameya im koza achakulo. Even though he may tarry, every day I wait for him. We will never be satisfied, says the Rav, with anything. We will never be satisfied with the gifts that God bestows upon us if the Beis HaMikdash remains in ruin. If it is not rebuilt and if it is not restored, then there's no limit to our mourning. And we say, Ani mami b'vias HaMashiach. And without the Messiah and without the rebuilding of the third temple, our mourning never ends. And the piece ends, and this is actually the last essay in the Sefer, the closing sentence of the whole Sefer. May it be rebuilt and restored soon and in our day. So the question is, which is what I want to address in today's shir, but that is our introduction. Can we rebuild the Beis HaMikdash? And why do I say that? The Chafetz Chaim famously waited every single day for Mashiach. He had a suitcase, he was ready to go. It's brought down in one of the Sfarim, I don't remember which Sefer. A few years ago, I heard Rabbi Shai Shechter tell this over in a shir, and he sent me the source for it. I have it at home. And it's brought down in one of the Sfarim that two people came to the Chafetz Chaim with a contract. They're entering a business deal together. And they had every clause and every eventuality. If this happens and that happens and this happens and that happens. And the Chafetz Chaim was so upset. He said, you don't have a clause in here. What if Mashiach comes? Then what happens to the business? You thought of every eventuality except for this. So the Chafetz Chaim, the hated the Chafetz Chaim, the saintly, Kadosh Chafetz Chaim, couldn't bring Mashiach. The Chassam Sofer, the Vilna Gaon, cannot bring Mashiach. All of the Hasidic rabbis cannot bring Mashiach. The Rambam and the Ramban, Rashi, Tosfos, the Gaonim, the Amoraim and Tanaim cannot bring Mashiach. Rabbi Akiva cannot bring Mashiach. So I'm going to bring Mashiach. Is it possible for us to actually bring the redemption? And how do we understand this? That we, it is incumbent upon us to bring the Geula, and it is incumbent upon us to ensure that the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. We are such a low level with the Yeridus Hadoros, considering all the giants who came before us, of Shimon Shkop, of Baruch Ber, of Achanan Wasserman. I'm going to bring Mashiach. Of Meir Shapiro of Lublin. How do we understand this? So this year is based on thoughts from Rabbi Zev Lev Shlita. It's from a bunch of years ago. I went for a fast talk last week. I actually listened to the shir two times, two different days, to make sure that I had the information. So it's based on a shir that Rabbi Zev Lev gave years ago for Sfiras HaOmer. But it applies very much to the question that I am putting forth today. How could we bring the redemption? What is our role in bringing the Geula? What's the point of even trying if we don't even come up to the ankles of the Gedolim who lived before us? So keep in mind, it was a Sfirsa Omershir. Why did the students of Rabbi Akiva die? So everybody knows the famous Maseches Yevamos. Why did they die? Everyone knows that. I talk about it all the time. They did not give honor to one another. There are many ways to explain this Gemara. That's what the Gemara writes. Maseches Yevamos Samech Beis. That's what the Gemara says. Rabbi Lev said there's a Medrash that is also brought down that they had Tsarus Ayin B'Torasam. Shehayu Einayim they had Tsarus Ayin, stinginess of eye, narrow eye, when it came to their Torah learning. So what exactly was the failing of the students of Rabbi Akiva? The great students of the great Rabbi Akiva who taught us V'ahavta L'Re'acha Kamocha Zeklal Gadol B'Torah? Is the same students of this Rebbe, do they really not have honor? They didn't treat each other nicely. They didn't hold the door for one another. They didn't say please and thank you. Were they really talking Lashon Hara about each other? They were Gedolei Torah, the students of the Gadol B'Torah. So how do we understand this? So Rabbi Lev said as follows. When did Rabbi Akiva live? We know when he lived. When did he live? By Churban Bayis. Remember the famous story? You all know the famous story at the end of Maseches Makos, the very last daf in Makos. How does the Gemara there end? He's walking with his colleagues, and they come to Har HaTzofim, and they tear their clothing when they see Har HaBayis, Har Tzion, and they're laughing, and he's there crying, and he's laughing. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? We're crying because the place where it says the stranger should not enter, there's foxes, and we shouldn't cry. He said, that's why I'm laughing. Now that I see destruction, I know there will be redemption. Akiva Nechamtanu, Akiva Nechamtanu. The students of Rabbi Akiva lived in the time of Churban. They lived in the generation immediately after Churban Beis HaMikdash. They were the first door after destruction. With every subsequent generation that moves farther and farther away from Har Sinai, we have what's called a concept of Yerida Sadoros. I'm sure you are all familiar. It's something I've mentioned before. Many mentioned before. There's a concept of Yerida Sadoros. Unlike, Rabbi Lev said, technology and science, which always moves ahead. I mean, the technology, I'm not talking about the devices in our hands. I'm talking about, even think of the medical technology, what people are able, what doctors and science are able to do today to help people with healing in terms of technology is just unbelievably incredible. So science and technology always moves forward. But not so with Torah and Kedusha. The farther we move away from Har Sinai, the lower we go. Science and technology are always moving ahead. Imagine telling people 150 years ago what we would have today. They would literally not believe you. They wouldn't even be able to conceptualize what technology is today. Pacemakers and artificial limbs, bionic man and cochlear implants. It's all computers. I'm not even talking about the world at your fingertips. And washing machines. My mother's mother was a Holocaust survivor, and she had a Ringer washer. And I don't know, my mother remembers, I don't know what you had to boil the water, I don't know what you had to do. Today, Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, Zatzal Ask Yon Shaila, Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach held that doing laundry on Rosh Chodesh is not a problem for women. I'm not paskening, I'm stating. Why? Because in the olden days, you had to go down to the river. So Rosh Chodesh is supposed to be a woman's yantim, so it was a major tircha. Today, it includes pushing a button. And then you don't even have to measure the detergent anymore. You just take a pot and you throw it. I use them also. You just take a pot and throw it in the machine. So he held, there's no problem for, how do I know this? It was brought down in one of the OU Halacha Yomises. They're fabulous. If you don't get them, you should subscribe. OU Halacha Yomis. So he held, it wasn't a tircha. It's not, technology is that I don't have to go down to the river. I don't have to boil the water. I don't need a Ringer washer. I push a button and my laundry's clean. So technology and science move ahead. With Torah, it's not the same. The farther away, you can't compare us to the generation of Rabbi Akiva. The farther down we go from Har Sinai, the farther away we are, the more Yerida Sadoros. So with every generation, there's a Yerida. But sometimes, says Rabbi Lev, the Yerida is more drastic. From one generation to the next, it's like really five generations down. For example, he said after the Holocaust. the Gedolim before the Holocaust. I mentioned some of them already. Rav Baruch Ber, Rav Meir Shapiro, Rav Hanan Wasserman, Rav Chaim Brisker, the Chafetz Chaim. The Gedolim before the Holocaust were a very different level. It's not one you read of from pre-Shoah to post-Shoah. So everybody knows, it's a fact. They were giants. So too after Churban Bayisheni. The Yerida from before the Churban to after the Churban was not like one generation. It was the equivalent of, let's say, 10 generations down. You can't compare Torah and Mitzvot, says Rabbi Zavlov, when the Beis HaMikdash is standing, to Torah and Mitzvot when it's not standing. There's no Korban Tamid, there's no Korbanos at all. There's no Ketores, there's no Menorah, there's no Avodah in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there's no Aliyah L'Regel to bring your Bikurim, you can't compare. Then we go into Golus, there was no Shemitah, there's no Yovel, you can't compare Torah and Mitzvot before Korban to after Korban. You can't compare Torah and Asiyas and Mitzvos when the Beis HaMikdash is standing and when it's not standing. So the Yerida from the time door before the Beis HaMikdash to after the Beis HaMikdash was not one Yerida Sadoros. Was it 5 Yeridas? Was it 10 Yeridas? It was a significant drop. Is that clear? Yes? So the students of Rabbi Akiva lived in a time period where they were aware of this great Yerida. They understood it didn't go down one level. It went down very much, a high level, many levels, I should say. So they were machshiv Torah, their own or their friends, because they figured it was worthless. Mipnei shalo nahagu kavod zeh lozeh means they were machshiv the Torah of others, because if we're midgets, so there's nothing to give kavod to. I don't mean that in a, God forbid, negative way. It means we're very small people spiritually, so what am I going to give you kavod? And that's why they had tsarus ayin, b'torosam. They had a stinginess of eye. They didn't appreciate their own Torah or their friend's Torah. Because they thought, it's such a yerida, there's nothing to be machshiv. It's so low down. There's no kavod to give when Torah is so low. Because we're so low. So there's nothing to be machshiv. So they didn't give kavod because you don't deserve kavod. Ah, the generation before the Beis HaMikdash, they deserved kavod. We don't deserve kavod. That's how they felt. It was wrong. But that was their perception. Living in the aftermath of destruction, they didn't believe they had anything worthy to contribute because the generation before was so halog, so great, so amazing, so high spiritually, and they were not. It was a mistake. Rabbi Zav said it was a mistake. But that's what they felt. If they couldn't keep the Beis HaMikdash, we're going to keep the Beis HaMikdash, so we're so low down. They thought they were worth nothing. So they didn't give honor to one another. And they had tsarus ayin b'torasam. And now he gives a tremendous pshat of the following medrash. I've told this medrash over before, multiple times. I'm sure you have heard it in other places as well. Using this concept or this principle of understanding what the failing, but it was a mistake, of the students of Rabbi Akiva, their self-perception was negative because they lived after one generation, but it was like one generation really after 10 generations. So he told over the following medrash. You know the famous medrash about Sarah and Esther and Rabbi Akiva's students sleeping? Just by a show of hands. Is anyone familiar with this? Wow, okay. When I was writing the shiur, I was telling it over to my son a little bit, so I said, you know this Medrash? He said, no, I was very surprised. Okay. Medrash Bereishis Rabbah, 58.3. Pasha Nun Ches, Simen Gimel. The Medrash says, Rabbi Akiva Haya Yoshev V'Doresh. Rabbi Akiva was sitting and he was giving shiur, he's darshaning, V'Hatzibur Mit Nam Neim. And the students were sleeping. Rabbi Zavlov says, not much has changed in 2,000 years. V'hatzibur mis nam neim. Bikesh the Oran. Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake up his students. This is the Lashon of the Medrash. Amar. What did he say to wake them up? Ma ra saw Esther. What did Esther see? Esther, Hamalka. Shatimloch al shava v'esu mumei medina. That she would rule over 127 provinces. Ela tavo Esther. Shahaisa bas bita shal Sarah, let Esther come, who is the granddaughter of Sarah, meaning Sarah Imenu. Shahaisa mayav esum b'sheva, Sarah lived 127 years. V'timlach ameyav esu m'shava medidos. And she should rule 127 promises. So what's the medrash? The students of Rabbi Akiva are falling asleep. Rabbi Akiva wants to wake them up. So what earth-shattering news does he say to wake them up? He says, do I have a word that's going to be so exciting you're going to wake up from your slumber? What did Esther see that she could rule over 127 provinces? Let Esther, the granddaughter of Sarah, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 provinces. What's he telling them? What kind of medrash is this? What's the medrash telling us? What does Sarah have to do with Esther? What does her 127 years have to do with her 127 provinces? And, said Rabbi Lev, if you think of something to wake up your students, I don't think that's going to be it. Someone posted last week on WhatsApp, she said, reminder, not last week, a few days ago, reminder, today is 6/13. It was June 13th. Free Slurpees at Seasons Express, because it's 6/13. So I was so excited, I said to my husband, when you pick up the boys from school, can you, if it's not such a long line around the corner, I'll be excited, can you get them Slurpees from Seasons Express? Anyway, any age, it wasn't only for kids. Whoever wanted. So my husband came home with one for my daughter. I said, how did you get one for tomorrow? So he said, I went into the store also. They were giving it to anyone who walked in, because it was 6/13. 7-Eleven does it on 7-Eleven. Seasons does it on 6/13. That's something to wake you up. The kids are sleeping in school, and you tell them when you get out, if you pay attention, we're going to take a class. I can rest assured the whole class is going to wake up. And you, if you wake up and listen to this Chumash with Rashi, you tell them, and let's finish the Chazara. We'll go by recess from the school in Far Rockaway. We'll take a trip to Seasons Express. You all get a free Slurpee. They're going to wake up. You tell them that Esther ruled over 127 provinces because she was the granddaughter, she was the bas bita of Sarah, they're going to be sleeping and they're going to stay sleeping, so who cares? What was Rabbi Akiva really telling his students? This is such a tremendous pshat. I was debating if I should say this in shiur or not, but I am going to say it. It's very cute. I was writing this shiur last night, it was very late. We had a busy afternoon and evening yesterday. It was 10:30, 10:45. The shiur was already written in my head. I didn't write it last night at 11 o'clock. I first listened to the shiur of Rabbi Lef last week. Then I listened again this week. And all the sources that I wanted to share with you were in my head. Okay. But I had to put it down. So I made sure to say what I wanted to say. So it must have been 10:30, 10:45. My son is sitting. My desk is in my kitchen. My kitchen table is right by my desk. And my son is sitting learning Mishnayos. And I'm sitting at my desk working. And I'm typing and he's learning. So I look at him. I say, Shmuel, you know who I love besides for you? 1 second, he looks at me and says, Rabbi Zev laugh. Story. Rabbi Lef has the most unbelievable pshah into this medrash. It's such a unique interpretation. It's so geschmack, and it has such a chizuk for us. We have had such a yiridus hadoros in the 2,000 years since Churban. We're like the students of Rabbi Akiva, we're sleeping. My mitzvah's really going to build the base of English? Seriously. If I hold the door and smile at you and say good morning, I mean, it's nice midos, but that's going to build the base of English. Really? Rav Chaim Brisker didn't build the base of Mikdash. The base of Levi didn't build the base of Mikdash. The Gra didn't build the base of Mikdash. The Svas Ames didn't build the base of Mikdash. The Rapshitz Rebbe, my husband's 8th generation before, grandfather didn't build the base of Mikdash. So you and I are going to build a base of Mikdash because you had nice midos and you were patient, all the things we work on. And maybe you had some kavana by a halaluka, I'm going to build a base of Mikdash. We feel like the students of Rabbi Akiva. It's impossible for us to build a base of Mikdash, we think, even though it's a mistake. Because if they couldn't do it, how am I going to do it? If giants couldn't do it, how's a midget going to do it? I don't mean this in any sense of political correctness or incorrectness. I'm quoting the Rabbi Zev Left, use these terms. You have giants and you have midgets. You had it in Pashashlach. There were anakim, we're like chagavim. So that's really, should I really try to have kavana? I should really try to improve my midos? I should really try to beat Sanu. I should really try to be refined. I should really try to say an extra capital to him. Got another cheer. I can't build the base of the anyway. That's what the students of Rabbi Akiva felt. It wasn't that they were mean to each other. They didn't have cover for the Torah they shared because they felt such a yirida after Churban. But they didn't feel it was worth anything. So they were sleeping. The word for sleeping in the Mishnah is mit nam neim. Mis nam neim. Rabbi Lev says it means lackadaisical. He didn't use that word. It means passive. If you want to do it, fine. If you don't want to, fine. It just means a sense of passivity. They weren't taking action. Now we understand why. They couldn't keep the temple. I'm going to build the temple. So what did he say to wake them up? Esther was like you, he was saying to his students. What generation did she live in? We know. When did she live? After the destruction of Bais Rishon. She too was the first generation after Galus, after Churban. She was by Churban Bavel, Churban Galus Bavel. They were by the Churban from Galus Romi. But what did he bring to wake them up? Remember Esther? She was like you. She also lived in a time where there was a tremendous Yeridus Hadoros. She was the first generation after the first temple was destroyed. She could have said, I'm nothing, I can't do it, I have nothing to contribute. It wasn't one Yerida worth of generation from before Churban to after. It must have been 10, 20. So Esther could have said, I can't do anything. If Esther would have said, I can't do anything, who would have saved Knesset Israel? Would we even still be here? Who would have gone to the king? Who would have begged for her life? Who would have pleaded for her nation? She woke up. She understood that in whatever generation you live, you have a tafki to accomplish. It's true, they're giants and we're midgets. But here's the key, said Rabbi Lev. If you have a giant and you put a midget next to him, anakim and chagavim, so it looks like a grasshopper compared to a giant. A midget standing next to a giant is a midget and a giant. But if you put a midget on the shoulders of a giant, the midget's taller than the giant. It's true. Our generation, we are midgets. You can't compare us to the generation before us. Even the generation before of Moshe Feinstein, of Yaakov Kamenetsky, of Eliyahu Henkin. You can't compare us for sure to the generation before the Churban, Shoah. And not before them, and not before them, because we are midgets. But Knesset Yisrael is not individual doros that exist in a vacuum. We're an accumulation of doros. So every generation stands on the shoulders of the generation before. So we may be very, very low compared to 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, when Rashi lived 1,500 years ago, but we're on their shoulders. And when we're on their shoulders, we're even taller than them. Knesset Yisrael, I'm going to repeat it. It's not individual doros that exist in a vacuum. We are an accumulation of all generations together. That's what Esther understood. And that, again, the Medrash says, Tavo Esther, Shahaita Bat Bita Shel Sara. Key words, Bas Bita. She understood she's an accumulation all the way back to Sarah Imenu. She's not Esther Hamalka existing alone in a vacuum. Then you can't do anything. Then you're right, you're a midget who can't accomplish. I'm Bas Bita Shel Sarah. I'm connected all the way back to everyone who came before me, all the way back to Sarah, my matriarch. And I'm a midget standing on the shoulder of giants. But that means I'm taller than the giants. So I was thinking, Rabbi Lev didn't say this, but it made sense to me. Let's say you have a castle. You have a castle, and there's a very, very high window that needs to be opened for whatever reason. And as high as the giant is, the castle is still taller than the giant. The window at the top of the spire, he can't open it. He's a giant, he's very tall, but the window's just a little bit taller than him. So if you take a midget and you put it on the shoulders of the giant, who's going to be able to open the window? Not the giant. The giant can't reach. Who will be able to complete the task? The midget. He can reach. So we want to bring Mashiach. We want to build the basics. That's what we mourn for. Shivas Rabbi Thomas is a week from Sunday. Again, I chose this theme because we're not meeting again till Erev, Tisha B'Av. July 8th is our next year here. I will be speaking. I don't like saying Be'ezrat Hashem in regard to Tisha B'Av, so I'm not sure what to say. But if it continues as it's going, and we do have Tisha B'Av, but we can bring the Beis Hamikdash like we're learning today, then I will be speaking here as usual after Chatzot on Tisha B'Av. Rabbi Shechter did not give me the time yet, just a heads up. It's our annual shiur that should become annual. We celebrate Binyan Beis HaMikdash. That's what Esther understood. She was Bas Bitosh El Sarah. She wasn't just Esther. She was a continuation all the way back from Sari Menu. We are an accumulation of everything that came before us. And sometimes the giant can't even open the window. Sometimes they can't bring Mashiach for whatever reason. And you put the midget on his shoulders and he unlocks the key to redemption. And that could be us. And that's what he did to wake them up. Mitnamnim, don't be passive in the time in which you live. Remember Esther, she also lived after Churban. There was also a major Yeridas Hadoras from pre-Bayis Rishon to post-Bayis Rishon. But she understood she was the Bas Bita. We're an accumulation, not individuals. The reason it was a Sfira Shir was interesting. He started with the halachic debate. This was his tie-in. Is Sfira, he started with 10 minutes of halacha and then he went to the Ashkafa. Is Sfira, every day is an individual day? Or is Kantic Sphere an accumulation of days? We're not individual Doros. We're accumulation of everything that came before us. That's what the students, it was a mistake. They didn't understand. They still had to be Nohei Kavod. There was something to honor. It might not be like before, but there was still something to honor. Don't have Tsarus Ayin B'Torasam. And Esther knew she was tapping into the kohos of every generation back to Sarah. She didn't think she was worth nothing. She saved the people. She may have been very small, but she was on the shoulders of something very big. What does this have to do with us on this time period that we're about to usher in? By the way, again, I listened to the shiur for the first time last week, and I was already planning the shiur in my head, all the sources. And then on Tuesday, yesterday on my fast week, I listened to Rabbi Shai Shechter's shiur from Tuesday. And he said, well, since I'm not going to be here for Shiva several times, we're going to talk about the 3 weeks. I thought, wow, I'm Baruch Hashem in good company. This was planned before yesterday morning. So I also thought it was appropriate to talk about Inyanei Deyoma before we break for a few weeks of shiur. Why does this have to do with us? And as we enter this time period of the 3 weeks, we saw the Medrash, the Mishnah, the 5 things that happened on Shiva Sarva Tammuz, the 5 things that happened on Tisha B'Av, and the concluding words of that Mishnah and Tainis are Mishenichnas Av Mima'atin B'Simcha. We feel small, and we should feel sad, and we are small. So does my holding the door with a smile really make a difference? My being Mevatu, the chair, so someone else could sit here? I mean, really? That's going to bring Mashiach? What does this have to do with us? Everything. The Rishonim and the Achronim could not rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and bring Geula. The Vilna Gaon and the Baal Shem Tov could not. The Beis HaLevi and Rav Chaim Brisker, the Chavetz Chaim and Rav Baruch Ber, Rav Moshe and Rav Yaakov, the Stipler, and Yibadol the Chaim Tovim Veruchim, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, yet, has not yet brought the Mashiach. We will build the Beis HaMikdash. Called Dor Shel Abana B'Yamav, Kilu Necho B'Yamav. I think perhaps one of the most famous Ma'amrei Chazal from Talmud Yerushalmi. We're going to do it. The answer could be, quite possibly, yes, if we understand who we are and upon whom we stand. It's not preposterous to suggest that it could be our generation. It's not nonsense to say we could attend the brick-laying ceremony. So, correct, we do not give up because we're not nothing. Remember Esther? Said Rabbi Akiva to his students who were passive, sleeping in shiur. She saved Knesset Yisrael because she understood she was in a link on the chain, the Bas Bita Shosara. We do increase our Torah learning. We must be give kavod and be machshav of the Torah. We must do teshuva. There is a point. We must yearn. Eli Tzion ve'araha. Don't get so comfortable in here that we think that this is the best place. There's something better and we can do it. We can bring it. It's empowering. It's an unbelievable vart. It's true we're midgets, but you're on the shoulders of giants. And sometimes even the giant can't reach the highest window in the castle. But if you stand on his shoulders, you can. Rabbi Riskin, in his book, Listening to God, I'm not calling Rabbi Raff anymore. I mean, I finished the teaching of Rabbi Raff. I will probably be quoting Rabbi Raff again, but not in today's share. Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, in his book, Listening to God, Inspirational Stories for My Grandchildren. Did anyone read it? No? It's very, very nice. Wow, no? Okay. Very nice. Magid. Very nice. So he tells over the following story. 1975. And when I heard this idea from Rabbi Leff, and I thought of how strongly it connects not only to Sfiras HaOmer, but to the 3 weeks, and what we mourn for, and what we hope to accomplish during the 3 weeks, this story came to mind. There was a bookseller in Mea Shearim. I have a hearing loss, and background noise is very hard and distracting for me. I have a few more minutes to share, and I respectfully request your attention, please. It was 1975. There was a bookseller in Mea Shearim, Reb Shmuel, from whom I would purchase Svarim during my summers in Israel. He would give me the whole winter to pay him in installments. When I came back from Kibbutz Ein Tzurim to spend a week in Jerusalem, I knocked on his door. The bookseller sold books from his home. More often than not, he would open the door with a grunt. Oh, this was not due to lack of manners. Reb Shmuel believed we sin more with what comes out of our mouth than with what goes into our mouth. He did not like to speak very much. And therefore, he would take upon himself very often a ta'anit dibur, a fast from speaking. So he would grunt in his greeting, and if he grunted, I understood he was fasting from speaking. Two grunts meant he had a good book for me. Three grunts, Yakar HaMitziyot, a very excellent book at a bargain price. So when I knocked on his door this summer as I returned from Kibbutz Ein Tzurim in 1975, I was expecting, says Rabbi Riskin, a grunt. This time he opened the door. He embraced me. He was quite verbose. He was affable. He was talkative, outgoing. Reb Shlomo, he said, how are you? I said, Reb Shmuel, how come you're so talkative? He looked at me smilingly and he said, haven't you heard? He grabbed my hand and he said, the Messiah is in Jerusalem. Okay, I smiled to humor him. He gave me some very special Sfarim. I left, but I had a growing sensation in my gut, in my soul, that I could not quite explain. Was the Messiah actually in Jerusalem? I went to the Kotel. I prayed Mincha. I stayed for Arvit. I felt as I was waiting for something, or perhaps I was waiting for someone. Nothing. So the next morning, I went back for Shacharit. I don't usually do that, but I felt if the Messiah was really in Jerusalem, he would show himself first at the Kotel. So I went back in the morning to pray there again. I found it difficult to leave the Kotel. That night after dark, I listened to all the news reports, figuring maybe I would hear an announcement over the news. It was the days before, everything's on WhatsApp, before it even happens. Figuring maybe I would hear an announcement, that the Messiah was here. The radios did not broadcast the arrival of the Messiah. Finally, that evening, I had to take my plane back to New York. So I knocked on the door of Reb Shmuel's home. He was surprised to see me. He spoke again. I already supplied you with your Sfarim, he said to me. And I said to him, I don't understand. You told me the Messiah is in Jerusalem. I went to the Kotel for every prayer service since I saw you, and I have not found the Messiah. I looked, and I waited. I listened to the news. There's no Messiah. He looked at me and he smiled. He said, Reb Shlomo, ihr macht a groisen taus. Reb Shlomo, you're making a very big mistake. You think we have to look for the Messiah. You think we have to wait for the Messiah. But it's really the opposite. The Messiah is looking for us. The Messiah is waiting for us. I went out shaken. I felt the Messiah really must be in Jerusalem. But whether or not he would be revealed depended on us. And now I understood, said Rabbi Riskin, I am part of that us. I think what Rabbi Leff teaches and the way that he interprets the Medrash is very, very, very powerful and very, very, very relevant. We are very low, but we are not, and we should not be in our own eyes like grasshoppers. Those people rejected Eretz Yisrael. And you see yourself like a grasshopper, wow. Final minute of Shir, I just thought of something. Maybe that was part of the problem of the Meraglim. They saw themselves as midgets, so they rejected Eretz Yisrael. The last pasuk of Perek Yud Gimel in Shlach. V'hayinu be'einenu kechagavim. So if Esther would have thought she was a midget, a grasshopper, she wouldn't have done anything. If Rabbi Akiva thought he was a midget, he would have done anything. He would not have done anything. Maybe that's where it really all begins, way before the students of Rabbi Akiva. That door didn't feel they had the kochos to enter Eretz Yisrael and build the Beis HaMikdash. So Hashem said, you won't enter. Whatever generation we live in, we are the Bat Bita Shel Sarah, or the Ben Ben of Avram. And as low as we may be, we might just be able to reach the window and unlock it and bring the Messiah, because we're standing on the shoulders of giants. So yes, can you hold the door open and smile? Could it actually bring Mashiach? Maybe. Because we think we're waiting for the Mashiach. But I think maybe every day the Mashiach says, I'm waiting for them. It's an empowering idea. It's a new way of looking at Churban and Be'ezrat Hashem Binyan. And it's a lot of hopeful. Yesh tikva la'acha risech. V'shavu banim legvulam. There is hope for the end. If we understand our role, our generation, where we stand, and upon whom we stand. Maybe we have the key to unlock the geula. I wish everybody a healthy few weeks. I will see you Be'ezrat Hashem on Thursday, July 8th, which begins the 6-week summer session, and an easy and meaningful tainus on Shivasar Batamas. Thank you so much, everybody. Kol Tov.